and welcome to The Squeal, PIC's swine management podcast featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. Nutrition is a key element in maximizing genetic potential. To help your management team take full advantage, we've assembled a highly regarded nutrition roundtable for this episode. Dr. Noel Williams of Iowa Select Farms joins PIC's Marcio Gonsalves and Wayne Cast.
Very good. My name is Marcio Gonsalves. I'm a nutritionist for PIC now for 2 years and a half. Went to vet school down there in Brazil and then got my PhD at K-State in swine nutrition.
Noel Williams, I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Iowa Select Farms. I've been with Iowa Select for about 6 years. Prior to that, I was with PIC in technical services role.
I'm Wayne Cass, and I work half-time for PIC, and then I do nutritional consulting for about six producers. And I got my nutritional training at the University of Nebraska.
So to kind of set the stage, something Steve Meyer said 5 years ago was, we thought we were really good at feed efficiency. And then corn got to $7. And we got a lot better. Just because, wow, how do we manage this when we're forced to pay attention to it? So I want to look at nutrition that way. Obviously, big cost, major cost, main cost, big number when you think about what the costs are in bringing a pig to market. How are we at feeding these pigs in the way that's going to most efficiently allow them to maximize their potential?
And probably we do in a cost-effective manner. I think chasing a number of 2.3 to 1 on feed conversion may not put the most money in the producer's pocket. So you have to be aware of that too. As these pigs have gotten more efficient, I mean, I remember when Ernie Pao told me that pigs gained 2 pounds a day in the 1950s. Now their feed conversion was quite a bit different. But these pigs are so efficient now, seems like we have to put more nutrients into every pound to feed. There's a rule of thumb, 20 grams of digestible lysine for a kilogram of live gain, or 9 grams per pound. And the Marcio can come in on that, but I think the number we're finding today is not very different than that. And it's just that instead of taking 3 pounds of feed, it's only taking 2.3 or 2.4. And so we need to make those diets more concentrated. And we talk a lot about amino acids, but the same thing's probably gonna find out the same thing on phosphorus. And we've got a vitamin study going now that'll be done sometime this fall to see if there's anything there. They're being more efficient using fewer pounds of feed. And, so we need to make the diets a little more concentrated.
Noel, have you seen that change at Iowa Select in just the period of time you've been there? I mean, really a difference in the diet?
Yes. You know, as I look back, I'm not quite as old as Wayne, but...
most of Sequoias aren't as old
the
as
gap, yeah. The gap is narrower than Marcio, but, as I look back, pigs have changed dramatically from a biologic capacity standpoint in terms of both growth rate, lean efficiency, feed intake. So there's been major changes within genetic lines and as a result how nutritionally we feed them. I think the one thing that we emphasize is we define efficiency based upon economic efficiency. We really don't look at a targeted goal for traditional feed conversion. It's based on feed cost per pig relative to other constraints, space management, space availability, maximizing throughputs through the system. So I think every system's a little bit different. Every system's unique in how they measure their business and how they operate. So I think one of the tricks or the key things that a nutritionist has to understand is, one, the system, and then secondly, based upon the biologic training and the biologic knowledge of the pigs, how to best feed the pig from a cost efficiency standpoint, understanding those system goals and system constraints.
What are the focus points for you in that nutritional creation, management, feeding? What areas do you most, that you think are the critical?
Yeah. Well, I would emphasize a little bit on the energy, right? So feed is 70% of the production cost. Energy is about 50% of that feeding cost. So I'm 100% agree with Wayne and Noel on that. And I'd say that one of the things that we've worked on the last few years with K-State and launched last fall is the optimal energy level tool, right? In order to try to create some more systematic approach to help the industry really figure out, you know, that optimal energy level, which sometimes you're going to have slightly worse feed efficiency, but at the end of the day, you want to maximize the profitability. So I'd say energy is number one, right? And then amino acid after that and phosphorus from an economic standpoint.
Are customers good? I mean, where Noel says you need to recognize the environment at that customer, what it is that's important to them. Are customers good at letting you know that? Or is that kind of like, well, you know, we'll experiment a little bit and see what raises the ouch level to the point they say, oh, hey, I've got an issue here.
If you're going to make changes that
in the
diets that's going to affect their performance, you need to communicate that to them before you do it. Explain your rationale. Tell them why you're doing it and that you have their best interests at heart. And then if they don't, they have the yay or nay. They have the yay or nay. They can say yes or no. But you got to communicate that up front. And sometimes, though, when you make a change, let's say I'm going to lower the energy because it's going to save us some money and feed efficiency is going to get worse. Well, by the time they start getting closeouts, they forgot that conversation in total, and they're jumping up and down. What made our feed efficiency get worse? Well, I remember back 4 months ago we talked about it. So even though you try to communicate it, sometimes they don't remember all that. Or maybe they just like to torment me, which that could be the case too.
And I guess I'm thinking of these animals in a continuum, and maybe I shouldn't, but we've learned about feeding as these animals have changed through the genetic makeup, the genetic adjustments. So are we feeding these animals differently based on those genetic changes today from what we did 10 years ago? I mean, not just because we've learned more, but because the animals themselves have changed.
Yeah, definitely we are feeding animals differently every year. Based upon differences in genetic improvement. You know, I think that we, from a genetic standpoint, make faster improvements year on year. And so those nutritional strategies change and they are fundamentally different than they would have been 10 years ago. I think, as Wayne talked about, from a biologic efficiency standpoint, digestible lysine utilization, that hasn't changed. I don't think there's any good work to say that that's different, but the lean growth potential of an animal versus 10 years ago is 15-20% better. So as a result, amino acid has changed. Plus, as new research is done, as new inputs are available, that will definitely make a change in the strategy around formulation. You know, I think of the work that Marcio did at Kansas State around tryptophan and some of the amino acids and their impact on both efficiency and growth rate, modeling that to understand the economic outcomes of making changes within those. I think as that information becomes available and more readily available, then that's incorporated into programs at a quicker pace than it would have been 10 years ago, I think, with information dissemination. I think more people are understand or in tune with the understanding of their systems and are more readily available to incorporate that into their diet programs. Mm-hmm.
pretty big difference between the PIC recommendations from 2008 and 2016 in 8 years. And then Noel has a vibrant research program at Iowa Select there, and you've probably confirmed your lysine levels a couple, three times in that 6 years, you know.
Right.
So it's a moving target.
Right.
And we've talked about within PIC, how do we get ahead of this? I mean, how do we stay current when the animal is changing fairly rapidly? You know, it's a big change from 2008 and 2016. So what do we do about 2018 and 19 and 20? How do we know what to recommend to our producers for their, to give them as good an economic return as possible?
It's a great point, and it makes me think about some other industries where modeling is a part of their program in order to maybe eliminate some outcomes that before they even get to the research element. Do we do that in nutrition? How big a part of nutrition development now is using computers to model it to see how it's going to look before I actually put it in front of a pig?
Yeah, definitely. There's more models available today that are more easily accessible and are utilized in nutritional programs than 10 or 15 years ago. I know maybe 20 years ago, Wayne, there was some work to come up with a comprehensive model that modeled all nutrient requirements and all phases of production, and those were so complex and at that time did not have the computing capacity that we did today that they were not successful. But I think what's utilized today are pieces of models that people utilize within their formulation program, whether that be economic efficiency and around energy utilization, economic efficiency of tryptophan, threonine, phosphorus. There's models that are available and they're utilized in tandem or in a combination to come up with a final formulation program. But there's much greater knowledge and much greater access of that information, and that's utilized fundamentally on a daily basis within formulation and nutritional programs.
And I think we use the models to point us in a direction sometimes, and then we confirm it with a trial, you know, so because we don't quite. Well, maybe I shouldn't say we. I don't quite trust those damn things. But, yeah.
Now, I agree with Wayne and Noah, but I will play the devil's advocate a little bit here. On the NRC 2012 book, right, there's a spreadsheet with it. And once you adjust for intake and lean growth and point of maximum protein deposition, it actually turns out to be fairly robust. Which is a lot of times myself and we all downplay that a little bit, but it's surprising from amino acid standpoint, lysine. It actually for just those factors come right at we are today at PIC on the lysine. So on a positive note for the modeling, I suppose.
And then tell him, Marcio, a little bit about how we came up with those 2016 lysine recommendations. How many trials, how many pigs, that, tell them that.
Sure, yeah. So that was, we worked with multiple production systems there to collect a few data sets and what was published already and some information from within PIC as well. So those would be 27 studies, you know, over 45,000 pigs there. And we were able to use that information to do a meta-analysis and, you know, summarize, okay, what's our new requirement. And we also used that to create a biological simple spreadsheet to, you know, plug the weight breaks and all that and the energy, as well as an economic model to come up, okay, here's the biology of the pig. If I'm having any trouble, I'm going to be at the biology of the pig, but if I'm not having any trouble and here's the economics, I'm going to be at the maximum economics. Mm-hmm.
So operations that excel at having the right nutritional formula and getting it to the pigs at the right time, what is it that they have in common when you think about, you know, I think of this operation and, you know, I really, they do a good job. What are those 10 commandments or 5 that are a part of their operation that relate to nutrition that ensure that they're getting that right?
To get the right feed at the right, in the right bin at the right time. There's a lot of implementation to it. And I think one thing about feeding programs, as nutritionists, we probably don't go out to the farms to diagnose a zinc deficiency or, we're not feeding enough tryptophan or something. We go out to the farms just to figure out what they really can implement and try to make our program user-friendly and implementable. So I think that's part of it, the right feed, the right bin. And then so you got this, we can generate, you know, one of my old sayings is that we formulate with a micrometer. The feed mill marks it with a chalk, and we get it to the farm and we cut it with an axe. And so we lose precision. And so is the feed mill making what we think they're making, and are we getting to the farm? And then they focus on lots of things. They focus on particle size. They focus on, feed mill accounting is your friend, where they look at, here's the expected use of an ingredient, and here's our actual use, and how does that tie to the proximate analysis that you're doing? You know, you can determine things like that.
Yeah, one thing I would add is, you know, make sure what most of what you're doing, at least is there's some hard evidence that there's reason to do that, right? And I think most good systems do that, from ingredient and / management standpoint.
When times are good, sometimes we put things in feed that we shouldn't, and then sometimes when times are tough, then we take some things out that we shouldn't. And I think a good nutritionist kind of keeps both those things from happening, you know, tries to keep from putting stuff in. Although when pigs are really profitable, extra gain is worth more to you, but still, you always, as Noel pointed out, you got to look at the economics of these things, and those economics can change. The questions stay the same every year, it's just the answers are different. And so focusing on, as Marcio pointed out, research-proven, good concepts, and good products.
Is there a role for high fiber in the finishing barn?
I mean, I'd say that it would depend on the economics, right? That's back to the economics, right? The only thing I would add is that you want to make sure in the last diet, last 20 days, you need to run the economics again, because you have a role there from the fiber on intestine weight and influence the yield if you have a lot of fat. Sometimes it makes sense to still have some level of fiber there, but you need to make sure the numbers are making sense.
Yeah, I agree with Marcio. Definitely, there are feedstuffs that are higher in fiber than average that can be utilized in programs to improve economic efficiency, and I think those can be utilized in all phases of the pig's life. As Marcio alluded to, I think you do have to be cognizant of the impact that it has on carcass yield. Probably a better measure to evaluate growth rate is carcass average daily gain than live average daily gain. It's more difficult to measure because yield can be quite variable measured at a packing plant, and there are other factors that influence the variability around that yield outside nutrition. But I do believe that carcass yield is a much better or carcass daily gain is a much better measure of the impact of nutritional program than live daily gain.
Because you'll see differences in yield on the same feeding program in the same packer, two different plants. You'll see yield differences between them, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the part where it gets tricky to measure, but it's the right thing to do.
And there are seasonal changes in yield at the same packer, same genetics, same nutritional program. So there's factors that will influence yield, but if you have the data available to measure it on a carcass average daily gain basis, it will give you the best economic decision.
we used to, corn, soy, vary the ratio. Nutrition was pretty simple, you know. This is life's good. And then ethanol and distillers came along, and we used to look at those European diets, and they're feeding all those byproducts, and why do they do that? Well, now we do that here. And so I think I read somewhere, when we farm with horses and use horses for transportation, 30% of the crops raised went into the horses. And now about 30% of the corn we raise goes into ethanol. And those numbers probably aren't right, but we got all this stuff left. We got to do something with it. And sometimes it's really a good buy. And when it first started, it was really a good buy, and now it's gotten a little narrower. And here lately, it's gotten narrower yet. But yeah, our diets have more fiber than they ever did before.
I have one question though for you. What should the industry be doing more of as far as information on the closeout? You know, you talked about carcass average gain, you know, caloric efficiency. What should we be seeing more of that we are not doing enough to try to have a good handle of things?
And Marcio, you'd see more of the industry today than I would have in other times in my career. But the things that we measure are carcass average daily gain, caloric efficiency, and we try to keep caloric efficiency simple from the standpoint that we always use the same rationale or same standard loadings for those ingredients so that we don't artificially influence our results because we change the energetic efficiency of a diet of an input by 10%. So we try to keep that as standard as possible. And so those are two things that we really use to measure our efficiency of the program from a growth rate and a feed efficiency. We use caloric efficiency. The other thing, from an economic standpoint, we measure cost per calorie rather than cost per ton, or we use cost per calorie. And we try to measure that on a weekly basis versus a closeout basis. Mm-hmm. And that's the format that we use to formulate too, because by the time you get to the end of the closeout, you're done. You know, back to Wayne's earlier comments, changes that you made 4 months ago, you need to understand why you made that change, and you need to measure it before the 4 months are done. So we try to do that by looking at cost per calorie on a weekly basis.
And that caloric, Marcio's question and Noel's answer, so in-house, Noel can keep those energies on those ingredients standardized, but so let's say PIC was going to do this meta-analysis and can compare all these farms, and that gets pretty tricky when this place uses 1538 for energy on their corn, and this one uses 1520, and this guy's on the NE system, and this guy's not, and it gets pretty tricky on that energy efficiency. It's a noble goal, and it's worth doing. It's just going to be tricky, tough.
So that takes me to tools, where we're talking about measurements. What are the tools that nutritionists have access to today to help ensure that they're getting the right feed in the right bin at the right time? And something that Wayne said a little earlier, does that help with pushback from management when they say, whoa, what happened to my feed efficiency here? So tools, and does that help?
Marcio and Weasley are good modelers and good tool producers. And the ones that I think Marcio talked about, the energy tool to help us decide what is the most cost-effective energy level to be feeding, that's a good one. And then there's two other ones that I use probably even more. One is it tells you for different weight breaks and different energies of diets what the biological requirement is for the PIC pig. And these tools are on the webpage. So, and it gives you the lysine level that'll give you 100% of the gain and 98% of the feed efficiency. And then there's another tool, because to maximize gain and feed efficiency is not always the most cost effective thing to do. Another tool is one that is the economics. And so you would look at different levels of lysine to see which is the most cost effective for that set of situations with the market, what it is, your feed costs, what they are. Those are really useful tools. And that's probably the one thing that I like about PIC for me is that I could have never developed those tools because I don't have those skills, but Weasley and Marcio do. And so that's really useful to me.
Formulation programs, formulation tools today are much more advanced than they have been historically. I think the other thing that is utilized, you know, and Ben and Marcio alluded to, getting the right feed in the right bin, our ability to process orders from the sites through the system, integrated into a feed mill, and then understanding what was delivered when to the site is much better today than it was any time in my career. The integration of the feed ordering with the financial system, with the mill, and then understanding what's actually delivered to the farm today is done with, I don't want to say 100% accuracy, but 95% accuracy. Historically, I would say that number would be below 50%, you know, in some situations. So that integration, the financial, the formulation, the feed ordering, feed delivery is the capacity there is a tremendous tool, and I think have really taken the systems a big step forward in terms of ensuring the right feed at the right time to the right pigs to maximize biologic efficiency, but also from a food safety standpoint, from an antibiotic residue standpoint. That's something that still is a concern, but I think those concerns are much, much less today because of the integration of the technology in all of those phases.
Yeah, I'd add that I see some systems experimenting, you know, with either load cells in bins, which if you work with load cells, you know, after a while they get old pretty quick with moisture and everything. So, you know, but something along those lines, another system is working with some probes, right, in the bin, to be able to figure out how much feed's left in there. Today with cell phones and everything, and be able to track where trucks go and did they deliver that in the right bin. From that standpoint, I think some systems are having some strides in that direction.
So trust but verify. How do we verify that? I mean, how often do we assay? How often do we make sure that we're just making sure?
It varies a lot from system to system. Yeah, varies a lot.
Do you think we do it as much as we should?
I don't know. I know, you know, we would reconcile those things on a daily basis, both from input from the feed mill and input from the site, to try and ensure that we have reconciliation around that, which I think is enough. We're also working on some technology, as Marcio had talked about, where we have instantaneous recognition that feed was delivered to a bin at a site, and then incorporate that into the verification, but also that verification that feed got in that bin will be the trigger for the next feed order and the next feed delivery to automate that process even further. And that technology is available today. I think it's just a matter of streamlining the program and implementation, but within 6 months, I think a good portion of our system will have the capacity to do that.
And you can find, talking generally about tools, I mean, you can find very good tools in websites of the major universities and the swine groups, you know, that can be helpful, from stocking density to fiber withdrawal and all those things. So
what tool are you looking forward to that we don't yet have?
That Foster's one's almost done. That'll be good.
Right, yeah. Being able to figure out that one from a biological standpoint, just, you know, phosphorus, you know, different weight breaks. So here's the tool that I'm looking for. It's the one that integrates all that. all those different tools that are available. But it's, as we know, well, first, all tools are wrong, right? And all models are wrong. We recognize that, right? But when you do that, when you put all of those tools together, you know, we know there's some interaction between the factors, but we don't have the data to account for that sometimes. So the more you combine them, you can get pretty tricky, and that's where models and become obsolete maybe is the word, but it's people like Wayne saying, well, I don't trust models, you know, because you got to that point where it's too many assumptions and then it's flawed, you know.
Yeah. And then I go back to Noel's comment earlier about, but yet we have so much more computing power, our models are better, and yet Wayne and I have been around long enough that we know how even better isn't yet a live pig. So trust, that's why we check.
Yeah. Trust but verify. I think that was, and that's true in a lot of things, yeah.
Particle size. Boy, that's been a conversation for a long time. What are your thoughts on particle size? You have some.
Yep.
Yeah. I can tell because you're nodding.
Yeah.
Wayne, thinking about how that's evolved, you know, what were the concerns 20 years ago? What are the concerns today?
The rule of thumb is, you know, from if you start with corn in every 100 microns, you get it finer, you're going to improve your feed efficiency by 1.2 to 1.4%. And so, and you can do that a lot cheaper than you can with any additive or energy or anything else I know. So yeah, grinding is really important. If that goes from 1,000 every, you know, 700, 800, or 900, 800, 700, I believe all those, you're going to get that 1.2 to 1.4. But you get down to 500 or so, I'm not so sure that it continues after that point. And then Ben Habrill, who works with Noel there, and Ben is sharp as a fistful of tacks. He's really a sharp cat. And he doesn't just worry about what the average is of the particle size. He's also worried about how many of those particles are big, and thinking that too, there's more benefit in taking a 1,000 micron chunk and breaking it into 2 500 chunks than there is breaking a 500 into 2 250s. I think that's basically his thought process. So we're going to grind it as fine as we can, and probably, you know, PIC's recommendations is 450 to 550 without a flow agent. But then we got no good deed goes unpunished. And so then we got to get the damn stuff out of the bin. I heard a phrase the other day I liked, nutrient access. Well, it's one thing for us to put the right nutrients in a ton of feed, but the pig has to get to it. You know, the feeder can't be in. Feed's got to be delivered. Feed's got to be in the feeder. And the feeder's got to have enough feeder space. They can all access it, and they can, and enough pan coverage that he can eat it readily. All those things, nutrient access. I really like that term. So we got to get the stuff out of the bin, and Noel sponsored an ag engineer intern to help them work with their system to figure out how they could get feed to come out of their bins better. And he figured out, well, these tandem bins, if we manage them correctly, that should help. You don't want to put feed on, and Noel, you correct me if I,
nope,
but the gist of it was, you don't want to put feed on top of feed. So that means you need to manage your tandem bins correctly. He saw that feed will flow better if the feed line runs fewer but longer times each day. So you can adjust that proximity switch at the end of your barn, and that helps. Those deflector plates on the bottom and down in the boot, are created by Satan. For mash feeds, because they're okay with pellets, but they don't want them for mash. So you need to either take one or both those out. I think that's the time I visited with that young fella. That was my take-home message, and I thought that was great stuff.
No, he did a good job, and that research is published. He published that through Iowa State, so he did a good job, and I think biologically, the finer you grind, the more efficient you're going to be. As Wayne alluded to, I don't know that we know that it's the same change from 400 to 300, but I think 300 is better than 400. Mm. So, and it is cheap to do that. And I have always been the philosophy, you grind it as fine as you can within your system until you restrict nutrient availability.
Yeah.
And then you work on ways to try and improve your ability to increase nutrient availability so you can grind it even finer. And so, and Wayne talked about some of the things that we did. One of the things, runtime on our feed systems, we changed our feeder so that we had more capacity in the feeder. So when that feed system ran, it had to deliver more feed to a bigger feeder and just increase the runtime capacity. And we believe, and some of the research would show, that that improved nutrient availability and as a result would improve performance. So I think anything that you can do to move it finer will improve efficiency. It's just that balance point between nutrient availability and how fine. Also what Wayne described in terms of looking at variation, I think one of the things that we believe, in addition to improving biologic variation or efficiency, if you have less variation, one, it improves feed flow as well. So those are some things that we've looked at. And you know, there's the question of mash versus pellets, and I think the research that we have done, if nutrient availability is not a restriction, there's not enough economic justification for pelleting feed. But if feed system or feedstuffs utilized do limit nutrient availability, pellets can improve nutrient availability, and then they become economically viable because not only do they improve efficiency, they improve growth rate as well. And so we would utilize a combination of mash feed and pelleted feed based upon nutrient availability, basically. As feedstuffs change and the type of feeds that we feed change, then we would pellet feed to allow us to feed a particle size that's smaller yet still be available to the pig.
Makes sense. I think one thing we should add as we talk about finishing pig is on the pellet side of things is for different systems, try to figure out, when you're trying to figure out the economics of pelleting, the biggest wild card is the mortality, right? And that's where I think a lot of times when I talk to people, different people in the U.S. or outside, sometimes we forgot about putting mortality in the economic. And I think Noah is right. I mean, there's not a yes or no that would fit all systems, right, for pelleting. But based on your health status and all those things and how that influences mortality and removal and things, I think should be put into account there.
Because like Gene Gorley did a study, same barn, same genetics, same nutrition, and he did it two different times, and he saw a big difference in mortality one time and none the next. You know, so I think if you're going to go to pelleting, you need to be able to change with health status, change with economics. It's more valuable when feed's more expensive. The feed efficiency response is more valuable when feed's more expensive. Steve Kitt saw a little difference in his test barns, and then when he put it out in the field, he saw a bigger difference, you know. So yeah, that's Marcio's named it correctly with a wild card. It's and having a feel for that and designing your system so you have flexibility and be able to change.
So in a minute, I'm going to invite you to ask a question of each other. If there's something that was said earlier that piqued your interest and you wanted to follow up on that. Before we do that, I want to ask about amino acid availability and sourcing and how that fits into our nutrition programs today.
I'll give the historic part and then these guys can give you some current stuff. But so we used to balanced diets for crude protein, and we talked about protein quality, which was an estimation of the amino acids that were there and how they met the pig's needs. And then we started balancing diets for total amino acids, And then we started balancing diets for digestible amino acids. And at first, you know, when lysine, crystalline lysine was first available, you know, the rule of thumb was 100 pounds of 44 bean meal could be replaced with 3 pounds of crystalline lysine and 97 pounds of corn. And that worked. You could do that. And it was some months the soybean meal was a better buy, and some months the corn and the lysine was a better buy. And people switched back and forth. But for the last probably 20 years, for the vast, vast majority of the time, the crystalline amino acids have been very competitive and will save us a lot of money. And so you figuring out how to utilize those is really important. You know, it saves us money, so it's good for our pocketbook, and it's good for the environment because the pig's excreting less nitrogen the more crystalline amino acids we use. And they should drink, in theory, they even drink a little less water. So there's some advantages, these crystalline amino acids. And so now we have crystalline lysine, crystalline threonine, crystalline tryptophan, we got methionine, and in some special situations, isoleucine and valine are available too. But they really only compete with like specialty proteins, not so much with bean meal and other stuff. So, yeah, knowing how to use those effectively, and knowing what's next on the limiting amino acids is a big thing. And I think we've got it figured out better on that pig up to probably 200 or 220 pounds. But after they get big, it seems like people are approach it a lot of different ways. Some people limit how much crystalline lysine they use. Some people put a minimum on crude protein. That's an indication that we're not as comfortable as we maybe should be how we do it. So,
what's happening late finishing when we go below 12.5-13% crude protein? You know, after 220 pounds of body weight, and I mean, several studies, performance goes down. I mean, it goes back to economics. Sometimes economical to do that, but from a biological standpoint, any thoughts or what has been done, what should be done to figure out that?
It's a good question. I know there's good research that would indicate that there's a reduction in primarily growth performance below a certain protein level. And I think that's one of the things that Wayne talked about, trust but verify. And that's one of the things that we've done within our system. And within our system, we do not see an economically detrimental performance when we fall below 12.5 or 12 or percent. And so we would not formulate to a minimum crude protein on that late finish diet. Now, I think the research is good. I think it's probably gets back to what you define as economically detrimental. Will it reduce gain? Yes, but there's a lot of other factors in late finishing from a management standpoint that can overcome that reduction in growth rate. Space relief in terms of how you market pigs, and that's a lot cheaper than increasing and having a minimum crude protein requirement. Other technologies such as ractopamine. I think maybe lysine level in and of itself, regardless of crude protein, has a bigger impact than crude protein. But that's just what we've seen within our system. I know that work is out there, and it's good work. I think we might look at it a bit different than other people.
Probably one area I think that's going to get some more scrutiny in the next year in the amino acid field is this. Evonik put out a little paper on leucine to lysine ratio, and when the leucine to lysine ratio gets wide, that maybe we need more isoleucine. And then there was a paper that was at Midwest Animal Science meetings, CJ America and Hanor, and Keith Hayden presented that paper showing that maybe our isoleucine ratio needs to be higher in big pigs, even if our leucine to lysine ratio didn't exceed that 1.4 to 1. So that's an area for people to kind of keep their eye on and be thinking about.
You guys agree on a lot of stuff. Is that because everybody blames the nutritionist? I mean, you have bonded together in a way.
When things go well, feed gets too much credit. When things go poorly, feed gets too much blame.
I like that.
That'll be the name of this segment.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
On feed mill expectations, maybe just for us, not necessarily for the podcast, but, you know, that grind, mix, and deliver feed that people charge, I think people look at that more than they should sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that, and people have the damnedest way of defining, you know, oh, it's going to be our cost, but that, well, then, you know, you got to worry about shrink, what they're mm-hmm. charging you for shrink, and how good a buying they're doing. You got to reserve the right to be able to put your material in, because Noel may have better buying power than the mill would. Some of those things. And how many phases? I thought Marcio would maybe jump into how many phases we need to feed pigs, because it makes a difference. If you're pelleting, you probably can't have as many phases if you're feeding meal feeds, because switching over from one feed to another takes longer. That's something to keep in mind, and try to make your weight break so it sort of comes out close to even truckloads of feed. That's kind of a nice trick, too.
Are phases like automatic transmissions? They used to be 3-speed, now they're 13-speed.
Yeah, but there's some recent, well, Marcio will jump in on that, but there's recent research says that maybe we should be going back from a 6-speed transmission to a 3. Well, or at least from an 8 to a 4 or something. Yeah, tell them about that, Marcio.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean, and that's why I like biology, right? A lot of times in paper makes sense, and when you try to prove it, it just tells you the opposite. I love it. There's a few studies from Australia that show they compare one diet in the whole finishing versus 3 versus 16. And there's a recent one from K-State, and they're working on another one. And the bottom line is, yeah, 3 diets seems to work just well, you know, from a biological as well from a economic standpoint. Sometimes from a production system standpoint, you're going to have more phases. Maybe you have some sort of a medication program if they are having a certain problem. But that's been an interesting area there. Of course, you need to be careful, because if that 2 or 3 program is having trouble, you are having some trouble with vices maybe early on because they're so deficient, then, well, now you need to consider that. But in general terms, I think it's pretty interesting work. And from a feed mill throughput standpoint, feed mill managers would love that, right?
Every year, our pig's getting a little bigger. Our market weights are going up. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that changing, that we're going to be making these bigger. And every year, we're building new finishing barns. And are we making them any different? Are we making them, I mean, you know, we trying to do anything we can to get a pig grow as fast as he can. And I saw a study the other day where on a wet dry feeder, they were given 0.8 inches of linear feeder space. Mm-hmm. And they went to 1.6 inches, doubled it. And their market weights went up by almost 8 pounds. Mm-hmm. And then Brum's got a great picture where it's got a feeder and it's got a shiny spot war where the pig's rubbing his top of his head to get his snout in there because they're bigger. And so then for him to swallow, he has to back up and do this and to glom it down. And so bigger holes, different designs. I think your more feed storage is great, but are we doing others or what? If you build a new barn tomorrow, would it be different? And then there's the ag engineers, these leaner, faster growing pigs, they've increased the ventilation rates they think they required because they're putting out more heat. I mean, gee, this is a moving target.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the design of the feeders as pigs have gotten bigger to heavier weights is critical. There's, you know, as Mike talks about in terms of headspace or the ability to the pig to physically get it, have access to the feed. I think the one thing on feeder space that you have to remember, you need the optimum feed space to get every pig to first cut.
Yeah.
Because after first cut, which, you know, if you take 20 or 25% of the pigs out of the barn, the other 75% have enough feed space, have enough physical space. So it's really determining what is the most economical to get those pigs to your first cut weight. Because after that, there's no limitation. There's no restriction if they can physically get access to it from a shape and size standpoint. So they have to be careful in evaluating those studies, the impact, because if all those pigs were taken to 290 and you don't look at when those pigs were marketed, when those pens were relieved, and that impact, can lead you to the wrong conclusion.
And I saw something similar at one time where we were giving them extra water, and the extra water was making a difference until we did first pulls, and then it went away. Just what Noel said. Yeah.
Joining us on the Squeal today were Dr. Noel Williams of Iowa Select Farms, along with Dr. Marcio Gonsalves and Wayne Cass, to help your organization reach your goals. You're welcome to share this PIC podcast widely in your organization. In fact, we encourage it. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.